This weekend starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Moving and storing vaccines. I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour. It's one thing to research and develop a vaccine in record time, but some vials need special storage at temperatures of minus 112 degrees. Also, all this time working from home has led to a loss of motivation for some people. Hear how many Americans are now trying to get out of the rut. Plus, on the personal finance front, a list of assumptions about money we should never make. And how to politely decline a holiday invite during the year of the pandemic.
Well, I think right now, as we head into winter, which is forcing people indoors, we head into the holidays, people are making some tough decisions on whether or not they're comfortable getting together with other people outside of their family or their pod. And what I mean by be confident is I think you need to make a decision what you believe is best for you and your family.
Elizabeth Bernstein at the Wall Street Journal on how to say no gracefully to get-togethers during the holidays. Well, with recent news that the vaccine candidate from Pfizer and its collaborator was more than 90% effective and could be approved within a month, the reality of moving and storing the life-saving vials came into sharp focus, especially since the Pfizer vaccine, unlike the one from Moderna, needs to be stored at minus 112 degrees Fahrenheit. More from Elizabeth Weiss, national correspondent at USA Today. Elizabeth, take us through this.
First off, great news is that it looks like the Moderna vaccine is going to be right behind the Pfizer vaccine, and it only has to be at regular freezer temperatures. But Pfizer's still going to be out first, and we're going to need all the vaccine we can get. And so Pfizer is a messenger RNA vaccine, and it has to be kept very cold to stay stable because, as one guy, scientist I spoke to, said, you know, it's a really fragile molecule. So and the numbers are a little hinky. So what Pfizer says is minus 70 degrees Celsius plus or minus 10 degrees. So that means anything from minus 80 Celsius to minus 60, which is why you'll see different numbers. And then, of course, we convert to Fahrenheit, so you'll see between minus 112 to minus 94. It's still really cold. It's nothing that you can do in your house in a regular freezer.
What happens at that temperature to ordinary things that are not vaccines?
So this is where it gets kind of crazy. I mean, we've only recorded that temperature on the Earth once, and it was on the Antarctic plain. So things don't usually get that cold, but even when you start to get down that way, rubber can shatter. Any of your listeners who are in the upper Midwest in a real cold spell will even know that their tires can flatten out a bit because the rubber becomes less plastic, less movable. Metals become brittle. If you were outside and your skin was exposed, you would get frostbite almost immediately. The sap in trees, and this is even up, like I think it's only at minus 30, that sap in trees starts to freeze, and you'll hear popping in the trees as that's happening.
Wow.
So it's really cold.
So how do you manage storage and transportation if you're handling the Pfizer vaccine?
So this is it's going to be a massive undertaking. I mean, there's two basic ways. So Pfizer has designed this very clever, they call it their ultra cold shipper, and it's about the size of a carry-on suitcase. It's a very heavily insulated cardboard box, and into that box go up to five. It's like a flat carton about the size of a pizza box that the vaccine vials go in, and then on top of those is a big, if you get stuff delivered to your house sometimes that's cold, it'll come in those silvery bags that hold ice packs, only this one you fill up with 25 pounds of dry ice. And if you stick that in that box and you shut it and you don't open it, it's good for quite a few days.
We're speaking with Elizabeth Weiss, national correspondent at USA Today. She's written an interesting story entitled COVID Vaccine Candidate from Pfizer Must Be Stored at Minus 112, prompting a rush on dry ice. Some hospitals have those types of freezers?
Yeah, they do. So there's also, they're called ultra-cold freezers, and it's pretty much a medical specialty because you keep you keep blood products, tissue samples, things like that at that temperature. These are pricey. One about the size of your regular fridge at home is $25,000 because they're so cold. They also come in kind of a dorm fridge size, and that's like for a tabletop. So maybe your pharmacist might purchase one of those if they want to distribute the Pfizer vaccine. There's also a clever one, the Stirling Ultra Cold, who makes these. I talked to them, and they make one that's about the size of like a beach cooler that you take to the beach, and you can actually plug it in to your car, you know, plug it into the old cigarette lighter, and that way, say, a public health nurse could take this vaccine and keep it at the proper temperature and drive it, you know, a couple of hundred miles out to a rural clinic. Oh. But even those are, you know, upwards of $10,000. So it's not going to be cheap. A lot of people are going to be relying on dry ice. You can recharge the container every 5 days for up to 15 days, but then you have to have a place to buy dry ice.
So speaking of dry ice and storage, or is there enough of that available?
So there probably is going to be, it's interesting, there were news stories early on about how, oh, there's a dry ice storage, and I actually talked, I love my job, I get to talk to fun folks. Gem and Sons, they're fifth generation icemen in Akron, and I talked to the head of the company, and he said, well, so the thing is, dry ice is made from carbon dioxide. We used to get it as a byproduct from oil production, but now it's mostly a byproduct from ethanol production. So it all comes from the Midwest where we're making ethanol. And at the beginning of the summer, because of COVID, so few people were traveling that nobody was buying gas, and the ethanol had filled up all of the vats and all of the storage containers, and so they stopped making it, so there was no extra CO2 to make dry ice out of. He said, but that's all done with, and we now have as much CO2 as we want. So it sounds like there may not be a shortage, but there's certainly a run on dry ice. He's getting calls from faraway states that he's never heard of before saying, hey, you know, we're going to need dry ice. Can we set up an ordering system now?
Thanks, Elizabeth. Elizabeth Weiss, national correspondent at USA Today. Dell Technologies just announced their Black Friday sale, releasing new doorbusters every weekday, plus up to 50% off cutting-edge tech for your business. There's no better time to upgrade your small business with the latest laptops and desktops with Intel Core processors. Plus, there's free shipping on everything. Give Dell Technologies advisors a call. They'll identify the right tech solution for your business. Call 877-ASK-DELL or go to dell.com/SBBlackFriday.
This year, Michigan businesses have had to adapt, and the Michigan Economic Development Corporation was right there alongside them, helping to connect businesses to new resources, meet new partners, and access the additional capital they needed right from the start. If your business needs support to reach its new potential, the MEDC is available to help in any way we can. Contact us today for customized business assistance at michiganbusiness.org/partnership.
Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. This portion of the program is brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The businesses of the future are being built today, and Michigan is where they start. Learn more by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity. Two big recent developments in the film industry. One, Wonder Woman 1984 will be released simultaneously on both HBO Max and in U.S. theaters on Christmas Day. And number two, Universal and Cinemark have agreed to significantly shorten the theatrical window to just 31 days. Analysis now from Dr. Andrew Draper, co-host of a podcast called Off Script Film Review, the home of bold cinema. Andrew, explain the Wonder Woman development.
Well, first of all, that a big property like Wonder Woman, a $1 billion property, is coming to streaming, but that it's also going to be available in theaters. Theaters have not gone for hybrid releases before. They don't see the point. They feel like they lose money. But they don't really have a lot of leverage in this situation, and so they're playing ball.
Wow. All right. So what could this mean business-wise, I guess, for them?
Well, hopefully it'll get some people in the theaters and, you know, just kind of help keep theaters alive. For HBO, it's hopefully going to result in more subscribers.
From the theater standpoint, what are you hearing or seeing? Are people going where they're allowed?
Some, but not really. Honestly, I saw something in the theater this past Monday, and it was just me and a friend and no one else. So it doesn't really seem that way.
Wow. I haven't been in months. So were you required to wear a mask? Was there anybody in there enforcing? Just curious as to your experience.
Yes, they require a mask. And everyone that I've seen is pretty good about it. No one seems to really have any disagreements with it. And you know, they're still serving popcorn and concessions, but behind, you know, there's plexiglass and there's no contact. So it's all, they're taking as many precautions as they can.
How about the movie in general, Wonder Woman 1984? What can we expect here?
Well, this is, like I said, a huge property. The first movie made $800 million, and so they're expecting this to, well, it'll be interesting because you won't be able to measure it the same. But it's another Patty Jenkins-helmed film, and it's probably going to be incredibly successful.
We're speaking with Dr. Andrew Draper. He's co-host of a podcast called Off Script Film Review, the home of bold cinema. He's also on staff with the SMU School of the Arts. We're talking about how COVID-19 continues to impact the movie industry. So how about this agreement then between Universal and Cinemark? Explain that.
Okay, so this is really exciting, and this is very similar to a deal that was struck with AMC earlier this year. The difference is, when a big movie opens, let's say something like Marvel or like Christopher Nolan's Tenet, after 5 weeks, 31 days, it'll be available to rent on PVOD, which is the $20 high-dollar rental. This really hasn't been done before, and it's a shortening of the distribution window. So that's pretty exciting.
So folks have agreed here. What's going to happen to the movie industry then? Will we continue to see deals like this?
Yeah, I think so. Theaters have not wanted to really work with streaming and rentals. You know, a shorter window doesn't help them, but they've negotiated a cut of these early rental fees, and so they're incentivized to kind of play along.
All right.
And like I said, the distribution window has typically been 90 days, which is a hugely long time and is kind of a dinosaur from the VHS era. But now with advances in technology and streaming, there's no reason to have to wait that long to rent a new film.
All right. So is this desperation mode for at least one or two of the parties here?
Well, I think it's certainly making the theaters have to adapt, which they've been very hesitant to do before. But AMC claims that this deal is helping them stay afloat. So I think Cinemark sees that and is doing the same.
Yeah, very good. Excellent. Anything else that stood out as you were thinking about this?
I think it's an exciting time for innovation. You know, a year ago, we didn't have premium video on demand, the $20 rental. We didn't have this hybrid release. We didn't have this new deal between with streamers and theaters and studios all working together. So the pandemic is definitely forcing people to think outside the box and create new business models and distribution models.
Thanks, Andrew. Dr. Andrew Draper, co-host again of the podcast called Off Script Film Review. Black Friday's on the way, as you know, and let's be honest, things have gotten a little crazy. If you're looking for great clothes as gifts or for yourself, you can't beat cutsclothing.com. Cuts makes the best t-shirts, polos, and hoodies you can find, combining classic looks with modern fabrics. And when they say modern, we're talking up-to-the-minute technology. The new Pika Pro fabric is downright buttery soft. You got to wear it to believe it. It's an amazing combination of fit, fabric, and function. Perfect for work, a night out, or anything in between. Skip the gimmicks. Pick up the quality, minimalist clothes that your favorite athletes, entrepreneurs, and even podcast hosts are upgrading to. For example, I wear a Cuts t-shirt under an open flannel shirt with a sports jacket and just as a t-shirt. Shop cutsclothing.com between November 11 and December 1st to save 30% site-wide. That's 30% off everything with no code required. Cutsclothing.com between November 11 and December 1. Cuts Clothing, the only t-shirt worth wearing. Cutsclothing.com.
Higher rates of COVID and colder weather are making social interactions riskier, but there are ways to artfully decline something like a Thanksgiving invitation. Here's this weekend's Jennifer Koschenka.
If you're nervous about getting together with friends and family during the pandemic, there are some graceful ways to turn down an invite. Here with some tips, Elizabeth Bernstein of the Wall Street Journal. Elizabeth, your first suggestion was to be confident. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think right now, as we head into winter, which is forcing people indoors, we head into the holidays, people are making some tough decisions on whether or not they're comfortable getting together with other people outside of their family or their pod. And what I mean by be confident is I think you need to make a decision, what you believe is best for you and your family, make it with, you know, your spouse or the other adults you live with, and then you need to stand by it. Once you made your decision and what you are willing, the risk level you can tolerate, then you need to stand by this and be confident that you know what is right for your family.
So how do you go about turning down the invite?
So I have a bunch of tips. First, I think that right now, it's always nice to be polite. And I think right now, in these really stressful times, you know, when people are triggered easily, these times require even better manners. And so I think to decline an invite, we should pick up the phone and make a call. You don't want to text or email because it's really hard to nail down the tone of warmth or regret when you do that. So pick up a phone, be polite, and remember, saying no does not have to mean that you are giving a negative message. You're just relaying your regrets that you can't attend.
You mentioned along that the lines there that you want to be caring and sincere and kind of expressing that you care about that person as well, instead of being selfish about you only care about yourself.
Exactly. You're not going to ever change anyone's mind. So you're not going to call them up and scold them or make them feel judged because they are trying to have plans or a get-together. So be supportive of what they're trying to do. You've made a decision for your family and yourself, and now, you know, be supportive of the decision they've made for themselves. So you can politely say you can't attend. I also believe that you should say why. Be honest and say, look, I can't attend because I have a parent who's older and I'm trying to protect them, or I myself have some issue that would make COVID worse for me. I have asthma, for example. You know, so explain to them. Be honest. Don't make up an excuse that's a lie. Explain to them why you believe, you know, you and your family need to be more isolated, but then be supportive of what they're doing. Tell them you hope that they enjoy themselves. You know, remind them that you can't wait to see them when this is all over, that you would be the first one there if you felt it was safe for you. So don't judge them.
We're speaking with Elizabeth Bernstein of the Wall Street Journal. You also suggested if you can't make it to maybe send along a gift if that would be appropriate, or at least expressing some other way of joining in.
Sure. I think this goes, again, towards being supportive. And look, we want, and not being insulting, we want to have these relationships when this is over. This is super hard for everybody. So what can you do to make their holiday or make their gathering a little better? You know, if you like, send them something. Send some flowers. Send a little, you know, goodie to eat, you know, whatever it is, a note, a card even, but ask about the event afterwards. Don't just check out on them. Everybody's struggling to try to cling to some normalcy right now and, you know, some connection. And so be supportive in that. And I think little gifts and even cards, I always tell people, you know, send a card, just put a card in the mail to somebody. It's a really nice surprise for their day.
Elizabeth, what about maybe you have kids and they're just totally bummed out about the decisions that you're making?
You know, that's a tough one. It's hard on us. It's harder on the children. But I think then we need to be a little creative. We of course, want to explain to our children, again, honestly, this is what's going on. And it's going to be hard for them, right, to see another family or, you know, somebody else having Thanksgiving and we can't go. But you want to explain to them, again, why we can't go because of this reason. So-and-so is a little higher risk for COVID, and we're going to be very protective right now. We're doing what we can. But then you want to be a little bit more careful to build some joy in your home. Have your own gathering. Have put up balloons. I saw a friend last night was celebrating something, just she and her three kids and her husband alone in their home with a ton of balloons. It was awesome to see from afar. So, you know, so you can try to build in these fun things for the kids. And don't forget, you know, they're struggling too.
That's this weekend's Jennifer Koschenka with Wall Street Journal columnist Elizabeth Bernstein. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. If you're looking for a special gift for someone this holiday season, something truly unique, I've got a great idea. An original hand-painted portrait from paintyourlife.com. At paintyourlife.com, you can send any photo or combination of photos, and a world-class artist will transform them into a beautiful portrait at a truly affordable price. I recently had a portrait of our kids done. It's incredible. Now hangs prominently above the fireplace in our den. Taking less than 5 minutes, the order process was a breeze, and our painting arrived in about 3 weeks, packed and handled as if it were the most delicate item ever shipped. At paintyourlife.com, there's no risk. If you don't love the final painting, your money is refunded. And right now, as a limited time offer, get 20% off your painting. That's right, 20% off and free shipping. To get this special offer, text the word DEAL to 64,000. That's DEAL to 64,000. Paint your life. Celebrate the moments that matter most. Text DEAL to 64,000 for paintyourlife.com. Well, you've heard the statistic before. Half of all marriages end in divorce. Whether that number still holds true is debatable. But for many young married people today, it's their career or their spouse's career that's leading to higher divorce rates. Workers in certain industries are seeing higher divorce rates by age 30, according to an analysis of U.S. Census data from the career website Zippia. Why is it that certain professions are more likely to see divorces? In-depth analysis now from Jennifer Hargrave, attorney and founder of Hargrave Family Law in Dallas. Jennifer, did the findings surprise you?
It really didn't surprise me. I mean, I think that we know that different types of jobs carry different levels of stress. And I thought one of the things that was really interesting was the correlation between the income. Typically the more money somebody's making, the less inclined they are to divorce.
Money can buy happiness in some cases, I guess.
I suppose what I'd say is that it can alleviate stress, whether that's actually buying happiness or not, but it may help avoid some of the stressors that do lead to divorce.
So if 50% of all marriages end in divorce, how many of those or what percentage of those are because of money?
You know, that's interesting. We often hear that money is a cause for divorce. I always say, it's more of a symptom of deteriorating marriage.
Okay.
So when you're in a job maybe that's making less money, there are just more financial stressors. And those financial stressors can lead to a breakdown in communication, breakdown in compatibility and companionship. And those are things that we know cause the disintegration of a marriage.
All right. So number one on the list here, first line enlisted military supervisors with a divorce rate of 30%.
Right. And so, our enlisted personnel are certainly under a lot of stress. There's oftentimes a lot of job moves that have to go along with that. They're deployed for extended periods of time. And, of course, being separated from your spouse makes it very difficult to maintain the intimacy and connection that makes marriage worthwhile.
Yeah. What else stood out to you?
I was interested to see that lawyers were actually low on the list as a lawyer, but it makes sense in the whole context where you see the trend of those professions where more money is earned, that you have a lower divorce rate. So it does make sense in the big scheme of things.
Surprising for me was something like, it was number 21 on the list, but like nurse anesthetists, even, a divorce rate of 12%. But I think the point made in the story was these folks sometimes make these life-changing decisions.
Absolutely. And I think, I've known a few nurse anesthetists in my time, and I did find it interesting as well that that's a job with a relatively low divorce rate. And so I guess there's a lot of job satisfaction, which leads to, relationship satisfaction.
I'm speaking with Jennifer Hargrave, family law attorney based in Dallas. We're talking about the jobs that just seem to have a higher divorce rate. Based on what you've seen the past few months, have a lot of these issues been exacerbated by COVID and some of the restrictions that have come with it?
Yeah, we've definitely seen an uptick in the divorce rate, at least in my practice we have. And I think that's attributed a lot to the fact that people have been stuck in the home together, that they're not traveling for business, and they're not distracted by, children and activities and all those things that may keep a couple who's in a dissatisfactory relationship intact. But I think when you remove those distractions, they're stuck facing the fact they really don't like each other.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we've definitely seen an uptick.
Do you find this always comes down to communication in some way, shape, or form?
You know, I think communication, connection, right? That's what I think being able to maintain a connected relationship with your spouse is really key. And, of course, communicating in a way that expresses love and builds connection and doesn't alienate you from each other is a good skill to have if you are married.
Yeah. Did you notice in some of these jobs that it's white collar versus blue collar, or that's not even a reasonable comparison?
You know, I think these days it really isn't necessarily a comparison because there's so many opportunities available to people to earn money, like in software and in technology, that, you know, you don't have to have that professional degree anymore to be earning good money. I think really the correlation was the income level. So, you know, if you don't have a whole string of fancy degrees after your name, but, you know, you're wheeling and dealing and able to bring in the money, it seems that it's going to be less likely you'll get a divorce.
Thanks, Jennifer. Jennifer Hargrave, family attorney based in Dallas. Today I'm here with Josh Hunt, Executive Vice President and Chief Business Development Officer at MEDC. Josh, what were the biggest challenges for MEDC from the pandemic?
Michigan was one of the hardest hit states by COVID-19. At the MEDC, what we did is we immediately began focusing on economic response measures from COVID-19 to support our businesses, our communities, and our workforce in every region of the state. The first closures of businesses here in Michigan as a result of the pandemic happened on March 16th, and it was on March 19th that we launched our first financial tool to help small businesses that were impacted. And so it was an immediate and ongoing response where we leveraged every resource available to help mitigate the negative impacts of COVID-19.
Thanks, Josh. To hear more of this interview with Josh Hunt from MEDC, go to thismorningwithgordondeal.com and click on the MEDC microphone. Hey, thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. If we carefully pondered the assumptions behind every judgment we make, life would become painfully unproductive. Still, it's helpful occasionally to question whether we're misjudging the world, especially when it comes to major issues, financial and otherwise. Examples? Jonathan Clements at HumbleDollar.com put together a bunch. Jonathan, your take.
Well, we all operate most of the time on instinct. We make these snap judgments when we're driving, when we're in the grocery store, and most of the time these snap judgments are really pretty good. You think about what it takes to drive a car. You know, often we get to the end of the trip and we realize that we've driven multiple miles and we can't really recall what we did along the way. We've done all of this driving on instinct and we do it very successfully. One of the things we know, for instance, is if a car suddenly appears in the corner of our eye, you know, we'll swerve out of the way. Mm-hmm. You know, we react very quickly in those instances and it saves us from danger. The problem is, if we do everything on instinct, particularly when it comes to financial matters, we end up hurting ourselves financially.
Interesting. Okay. So you come up with these like three dozen assumptions we should not make. Did you find a theme as you were jotting them all down initially?
Well, I think one of the problems that occurs is that we do a lot of things based on appearances. And so the number one item on my list is that people who are richer are happier. We see people who have more wealth than us, and we think immediately that that is, you know, more desirable, and hence they must be happier. But if you read any of the celebrity magazines or, you know, the online sites devoted to celebrities, you realize that in many cases their lives are full of turmoil, and that some of them are really quite miserable. Similarly, and related to that is, you know, we have that whole concept of the millionaire next door. We look around the neighborhood and we see, you know, the couple who have the big house and the his or her luxury sedans and the driveway and the beautifully manicured lawn, and we say to ourselves, they must be rich. Mm. And the answer is no, they must have spent a lot of money,
right?
Whether they are rich or not is another matter. It could be the house is heavily mortgaged, the landscaper hasn't been made, and both of the BMWs were leased.
Mm-hmm. How come it is in point number seven that great companies will be great stocks? Why is that an assumption?
Well, we assume that because companies are great, we think about companies like Facebook or Tesla or Amazon, that they're going to be great investments. And sometimes they are. Obviously, this year, all of those three companies have been a great investment. But history tells us that over time, the best returns actually don't come from investing in well-known, well-admired companies. It comes from investing in companies that are sort of a little grubby, a little despised, a little back on their heels. You know, the data tells us that these sorts of value stocks outperform growth stocks over the long haul. There have been long periods when growth outperforms value, and we've seen that over the past decade. But longer term value stocks tend to shine.
Hmm. We're speaking with Jonathan Clements. He's the founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com, and he's written a piece entitled Never Assume, and he's put together a list of 35 financial assumptions. I thought it was interesting, too, number 12, you said an assumption that paying less in taxes is always financially smart.
We instinctively think that's the case. Hey, if I'm sending less money to Uncle Sam, it's got to be good news. But in fact, this is something that people should think about for 2020. We're approaching the end of the tax year, and a lot of people, because of the pandemic, may discover that their income is below what it usually is. Perhaps they spend a period out of work. Perhaps they didn't do very well with their investments in 2020, and they're going to end up with a smaller tax bill. Whether that is good news or not in terms of taxes depends on what your income is going to be in the years ahead. If your income is much lower today than it's likely to be in 2020 and the years that follow, you probably want to take advantage of today's low tax rate based on your current income. Think about things like perhaps realizing some capital gains or perhaps converting your traditional IRA to a Roth IRA so that you boost your taxable income and take advantage of the low tax bracket that you're going to enjoy in 2020.
That's Jonathan Clements, founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com. Dell Technologies just announced their Black Friday sale, releasing new doorbusters every weekday, plus up to 50% off cutting-edge tech for your business. There's no better time to upgrade your small business with the latest laptops and desktops with Intel Core processors. Plus, there's free shipping on everything. Give Dell Technologies advisors a call. They'll identify the right tech solution for your business. Call 877-ASK-DELL or go to dell.com/sbblackfriday.
For the ones standing guard, for the eagle-eyed, for the knights in shining armor, and for all those who support them, we are Grainger, your experienced safety partner, offering supplies and solutions for every industry, committed to helping keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call clickgrainger.com/safety or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, glad you're with us. Without a reason to get dressed up each morning as we work by ourselves from home, some people say they're experiencing a loss of motivation and a sense that each day bleeds into the next. So they're doing a 180 when it comes to wardrobes. More from Suzanne Kapner, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Suzanne, what's up here?
So I think, you know, people after wearing sweatpants and leggings and t-shirts, you know, for the past few months when they were in lockdown and at the beginning of the pandemic. I mean, that was sort of fun. It was novel, especially for people who were used to getting dressed for the office every day. But, you know, now it's just becoming kind of depressing. It's a reminder of our kind of the state of the world where we're not really socializing as much or going places. And I think some people have just kind of hit a breaking point and they're starting to dress up even though they really have nowhere to go.
So to that point, I think it was a mom in Arizona, right? She just got dressed up to drive her son like 7 minutes to a swim lesson or something, right?
That's right. That's right. She said it just made her feel better to put on, you know, she put on a nice blouse and some jewelry, some wedge sandals. It just kind of made her feel like more normal.
Wow. All right. So who else has, say, done something along those lines, Suzanne?
Well, there's a family in California I spoke to who decided every Sunday night they're going to have a dress-up dinner, and it's a mom and her husband and their 8.5-year-old son, and they get dressed up. You know, the husband and son wear ties and blazers. She puts on a dress and heels, and, you know, she said even if she's only wearing the heels for an hour, it makes that day somehow different than every other day.
Wow. All right. So you represent psychiatrists actually have a name for this called enclothed cognition.
That's right. There was a 2012 study that showed that what you wear really does affect how you feel and how you behave, and that, you know, the dress for success, I mean, it actually does work. And if you're sort of dressed in a power suit or dressed up, you tend to feel more up to the task at hand. And, you know, when you're in sweatpants, you tend to feel a little more lethargic.
Wow. We're speaking with Suzanne Kapner, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. She's got a good story entitled "Goodbye Tie-Dye Sweatpants, Dressy Clothes Make a Comeback." We got any reaction from clothing retailers about this?
Well, interestingly, some chains that I talked to said that after, you know, loungewear was sort of the thing to buy in the spring and the summer, but they're lately starting to see a pickup in sales of designer shoes, handbags, dressier items. Kate Spade is selling this handbag in the shape of a pineapple that costs over $300 and it's been one of their best-selling items. There's a balloon skirt. It's sort of this very poofy skirt that you would wear if you had an event. That's been selling well at this online retailer, Clothia. And so they are seeing some demand return for these dressier items.
Is part of that, Suzanne, that people are anticipating going back to the office at some point and want to be ready, or it's a combination of also just being sick of wearing the same clothes?
Most of the people I talk to are still working from home for the foreseeable future, but there was a man in Houston who runs a retail brokerage, and he's been working in the office since May, and now that most of his employees are back, he started wearing ties again because he wants to send a message that, you know, hey, we're back to work. And, you know, part of that is wearing the uniform. So there is some of that going on as well.
Wow. Who was the one guy, too, who said shoes for him are his demarcation line? What did he mean?
Well, I think a lot of people are having trouble with, you know, when they work from home, the workday blends into their evening and off time. And so his trick is that, you know, he wears shoes even when he's on Zoom calls, because when he takes the shoes off, then he knows he's done with work for the day.
Thanks, Suzanne. Suzanne Kapner, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Coming up next, a restaurant's mission is saved. Well, we'll finish with this. Like many small businesses, Sakina Halal Grill in Washington, D.C. has been hit hard by the pandemic. The high-end Pakistani Indian restaurant has had to close several times. Owner Kazi Manan told WJLA that business was so slow during brief reopenings that he hasn't been able to pay rent on the restaurant or the mortgage on his home. But Mr. Manan and his employees aren't the only ones who are affected. For the last 5 years, Sakina Halal Grill has given away free meals to people who are homeless or in need, as many as 80 meals a day. But now that Sakina Halal Grill has been struggling financially, Mr. Manan can't give meals away anymore, but the Washington Post says a friend encouraged him to set up a GoFundMe. In a week, he had raised more than $250,000 from all over the world. He told the newspaper the money will go to the rehiring of some of his staff and paying for monthly expenses, which are about $45,000. He said the dream is to go back to the same old ways, going back to anybody who can't afford a meal can come in. Now it looks like that dream is coming to reality. That'll do it for this hour. I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.